And I agree profoundly with most of the things that on the political plane, of historical and political, have been said by our speakers, particularly with Franz Gerard, Justine, Professor Fischler, and Dr. Lacan. I think that now the context in which the Hague Tribunal is operating is characterized by an absolute and total turning upside down of the Tribunal. Among the purposes of the UN Charter, Article 1 speaks, affirms the duty to maintain international peace and security with effective measures, collective measures, for the prevention and removal of threats to peace, and bring about, in conformity with the principles of justice and international law, adjustment or settlement of international disputes, and so on. It is usually stated that this clause, this principle, the respect for justice and international law, doesn't concern the measures ex chapter 7. This is not true. The real meaning of this limitation is that such measures, I must remember that the institution of the tribunal is considered falsely, erroneously, as a measure at chapter 7. These measures, as they are shaped in the charter, not in the way they are illegally extended in the practice, may not in themselves have such a scope as to be contrary to justice and international law. They are purely executive measures, measures to stop a danger or a breach of the peace, and not to change the international legal order. In other words, the reference to international law and justice is a bearing pillar of the UN system. But particularly since 91, this pillar has been and is continually being illegitimately disrupted. International law has been and is being overthrown from the strength of the law to the law of the strength. That Security Council and its subsidiary organs, such as the Tribunal, act against international law should be unthinkable, but the thought is regrettably reality. And I examine some issues, some cases. In the Yugoslav crisis, first of all, the correct definition and approach with regard to the interrelated issues of state sovereignty and self-determination of peoples has been at stake. Contrary to widespread theories, in the UN system and in general international law, self-determination of peoples cannot be regarded to be a principle clashing with state sovereignty and territorial integrity. The sovereign state is free to defend itself against aggressions, and interventions in its inner affairs are forbidden. The only acceptable and in international law positively accepted exception is the self-determination as won and developed in the course of the struggles and wars for national liberation by colonial peoples or peoples in a similar situation under illegitimate foreign occupation or even in the national territory proper of a state in a situation of discrimination such as apartheid. This is only when a population is under national oppression or discrimination. This is the prerequisite for the exercise of self-determination. And we find a written norm in this sense in the first protocol, 77, to the 49 Geneva Conventions, which specifies the case of self-determination in the way it is said. rights occur a right of self-determination is born in international law for a people under national discrimination, which strives to get a change in the situation, even after secession, and that may be supported in various forms, even military and infrastructure, by the states. But attention, the legitimate repression of an illegitimate secession is in no case a prerequisite for authentic self-determination. But all this is true only in the territories of struggles against the constituent state. In situations where a state entity doesn't exist or is extinguished, or sovereign power over a territory and its population is dismissed or waived, the right of self-determination of that population, if territorially compact and united, is full and limited. The different territorial parts of a region without a constituted sovereign power are equal in their juridical position and have the same right to create, to constitute their own state or to determine otherwise their status. The principle of uti possidetis iure, that is, that administrative borders must be respected, is not a general ruling of international law. It is limited to Latin America and to Africa in the process of decolonization. And I mention a meaningful historical precedent. West Virginia, in the American Civil War, that was detached from Virginia. And that is the right. It was respected as right. When one part wanted to stay with the Confederation, the other part enforced it. But it was a precedent of secession inside an administrative unit. This is very important for the use of crisis. So, in the use of crisis, the secession of some republics has to be considered a matter of insurgency of local groups against the sovereign state. There was certainly not the prerequisite for self-determination, the discrimination against the population of the secessionist republics. In such a situation, every interference from outside was strictly forbidden. No doubt, the Yugoslav Federation legally still existed when recognitions of Slovenia, Croatia, and so on were declared by Western powers. And I shall not speak about the Yugoslav constitution, the constituent peoples, their relation to the federated republics. The constitution gave the right of secession to the constituent peoples and not to the republics. So the interference by the European community that obtained the withdrawal of federal army from Slovenia, accompanied by pressure of every kind, and no doubt serious aspects of international illegality. It is the same intervention. But the Western powers began to interfere even more heavily when they said that the inner boundaries in Yugoslavia were to be respected. And there was assumed also by Security Council Resolution 713 or 19. Particularly under pressure by Germany, Austria, Polish, Slovenia and Croatia were recognized as independent states. And later, Bosnia-Herzegovina and Macedonia. The Minister of Foreign Affairs of the States and the European Community had published guidelines for the recognition of new states in Eastern Europe and Soviet Union, an incredible initiative, inviting such states and the DNA to apply for recognition. They stated arbitrarily that the Yugoslav Socialist Federation had come to an end, while there were still factors and elements of that federation still active in the defense of the integrity. And this is also important, the position of Yugoslav authorities and of Milosevic, who was president of Serbia in the moment, was in a first time that Yugoslavia could not be crossed out by a stroke of the pen, so diplomatic stroke. Something later, then the Federation had to survive for all people and regions that wanted to stay in it. And this has been probably in bad faith misunderstood as an idea of great Serbia. People that wanted to stay, this is certain dimension. So there was this interference in the affairs of Yugoslavia, and there was the denial of self-determination for that part of Yugoslav Federate Republics that wanted to stay in the Federation, such as Krajina, such as Slavonia in Croatia, such as Serbian Republic in Bosnia, that were forced to stay in a new state which was determined by simply administrative borders. This was a forced constitution of a new state. That is quite contrary. So I quoted from a young Italian scholar, very significant, a non-existent on the international level, a right of secession was created by the political will of a group of foreign states through the recognitions, which have been given to the entire question the character of an international affair of self-determination without the relevant necessary conditions. Recognition in Yugoslavia has played a new role, because recognition should be only declarative for the fact situation. No more passive acceptance of a fact accompli, but an instrument to steer the course of events and of the quotation. With all the legal consequences that Mr. Locklander very well, this is an application, but on a fortified basis, the prohibition for the central authorities to contrast the decisions, the prohibition for third states, in this case Yugoslav Federation, to give assistance to the legitimate state, the legal possibility for the secessionists to receive help, even military, from outside. That is the complete turning upside down of the legal situation. Then the consequence, clearly, if in a conflict occur episodes of cruelty and even with a criminal character by every side, it is natural, almost automatic, to ascribe them preferably to the aggressor. This in the meaning that Mr. Cochran has very well expressed, to decide slander as such, and to amplify them for the benefit of mass media and their manipulators. So we have this manipulation of reality. By the strict, the legitimate repression the repression of the denied determination of Serbs in Croatia and Bosnia was considered an inner affair of the secessionist republics, not yet definitively constituted. The aid to such self-determination by Yugoslavia illicit, and consequently the even after the intervention of third states or organizations, NATO interventions, so legitimate against such supposedly illicit Yugoslavia. This was the first turning upside down of international law, with slandering Yugoslavia as an aggressor with all the consequences, the number of thousands, but on a false basis. I will be very short about another point, the denial of continuity of the Yugoslav Federation in respect to the Socialist Federation, and the application of double standards. What is more shocking is the different standard reserved to Russia. Considered as the continuing entity of the Soviet Union, even for the permanent seat in the Security Council, Perhaps there would have been more theoretical support for the thesis of the dismemberment of Soviet Union, where no active opposition against the separation of the republics took place in 1991, and on the contrary, Russia was active in the extinction of Soviet Union. In this framework, we should not forget the action of President Milosevic. Thanks to his active political commitment in the residual Yugoslavia, in the Serbian and Yugoslav constitution 1992, has been formulated in a non-nationalist way the right of citizenship, equal rights to every inhabitant, unlike the Croatian constitution, which provides that Croatia is the state of Croats. So this is an answer for the accuse of great Serbia. Another item of our turning in aggression, so-called cause of war, also there, it has already been said, the aggression by Western powers. In point of fact, I remember simply the interview with German General Locke, that as the night he was an observer with OSCE, with the genocide allegation, a genocide not only planned but perpetrated by Yugoslav government, in the opinion of the Western powers, members of Bundestag and of the German government have given vent to an enormous exaggeration. What Iraq's mass destruction weapons have been for Bush, the so-called humanitarian catastrophe in Kosovo has been for Germany in order to justify the war. German General Heinz Lohse. I will remember a positive note, a written note. Second protocol, 77, to the Geneva Conventions, relative to the protection of victims of non-international armed conflicts, that is to the application to inner conflicts of the Geneva principles. Nothing in this protocol shall be invoked for the purpose of affecting the sovereignty of a state or the responsibility of the government to maintain or re-establish law and order in the state or to defend the national unity and territorial integrity. Nothing shall be invoked as a justification for intervening directly or indirectly for any reason whatever in the armed conflict or in the internal or external affairs of the high contracting party in the territory which the conflict occurs. This protocol is enforced and is ratified by Yugoslavia, the United States, Germany, Italy, Great Britain, and others. This was the norm to be applied to the Kosovo conflict. Last of all, and I go for coming still to the end, to the conclusion, the problem of the tribunal. I underline a point which is generally overlooked. In the UN system, the acceptance of international obligation by the state is expressly bound, for many hypotheses, to the constitutional correctness of the state ratifications. Article 108, 109, 110, Article 43 about the forces, military forces to be attributed to the Security Council. This corresponds to a fundamental principle, as already been mentioned by Lafland, as enunciated, for example, by the great Austrian international law scholar Fedros. The United Nations have no sovereign right over individuals as such. And in this context, state sovereignty must be respected, so that a direct UN action on individuals without passing through state legal system is to be excluded. I agree with what has already been said. This is the essential structural reason why an initiative such as the tribunal is to be repelled as totally illegal. which is, according to the common opinion, the opinion of the tribunal itself, the legal basis for the creation of such an organ, of such an unprecedented organ. First of all, the Security Council allegedly boundless discretionary power in defining threat or breach of peace. On speaks no more of international peace, such as instead the Charter does. Peace, confounding together international and inner conflicts. This is an erroneous assumption, according to a correct systematic construction and ultra vox preparatoire. The other assumption, erroneous, the allegedly unlimited possibility for Security Council to adopt every kind of measures it deems necessary and useful. And this too is borne out in recent years by legal practice, but is likewise false. Articles 41 and 42 of the Charter outline two types of measures without or with use of force, and give some examples that are not, that are, of course, exemplifying, not absolute, but design some kinds of measures which cannot be overlooked to invent completely different measures such as a tribunal that doesn't correspond to any of the typologies drawn by the Charter. In particular, these measures, as I said at the beginning, are to be executive police measures to stop a danger, to remove a situation of threats or breach of the peace. They are not, they cannot be legislative or judiciary measures. Of course, a criminal tribunal can be, on an international basis, can be instituted, but I mistrust such, in general, such initiatives. But there are two formal prerequisites. Convention, an agreement by states, duly ratified, according to the constitutional processes of the states, because the individual rights of men are at stake in such initiatives. So, I agree completely with all the expressions of illegality, the opinions about the complete illegality of this tribunal, lawlessness. And it's clear that the Security Council has not such a power. And I should like to read the quote, a passage by Professor Gaetano D'Angelovich, who was a former member of the UN International Law Commission, one of the leading prominent scholars of our Italian doctrine. A quote: "The impression remains that international lawyers, the critical ones, are inclined, on the whole, to be satisfied with marginal criticism and marginal procedural suggestions aimed at making the Security Council's action legally less questionable and politically more palatable. One does not see in the literature an adequate treatment of a legal problem of charter interpretation and application. One perceives, at times, in scholarly attitudes on the subject, an inexplicable renunciation by the legal commentator of his duty in the face of power, politics, and realism." Rangelou's conclusion about the tribunal, in my opinion, is definitive. Clearly, the establishment of a tribunal is thus comparable to those entrusted to the ICJ, would inevitably have a very serious impact on the rights or obligations of the state, whose sovereignty and criminal jurisdiction would be affected by the carrying out of the tasks. And this defines two possibilities. Assuming the impact feasibility of a treaty, because it was impossible, of course, were thus theoretically open as a matter of law to the Council. One is a little paradoxical, but explains the logic. One was to take action by armed force in the territory involved, thus opening the way, action by executing arms, thus opening the way to the possible establishment of a criminal law court within the framework of military occupations, as traditionally possible. But that was not the case. The other way was to set up the criminal court per se, as an isolated measure affecting the involved state's prerogatives of criminal jurisdiction outside the framework of any military operation under the Charter. Unable or unwilling to pursue the former course, and led astray by legal experts, the Council chose to pursue the latter course. In so doing, the Council did not take a legitimate peace enforcement measure under any article of Chapter 7. It took simply a lawmaking measure which fell outside its functions under Chapter 7 or any other provision of the Charter or general international law. The United Nations ignored, in so doing, the capital distinction established in the Charter between peace enforcement, and lawmaking, law determining, on the other hand. The latter functions, the lawmaking, not having been attributed to UN bodies beyond the specified areas. I personally ask, name of that was the non-habit, Security Council cannot establish a subsidiary organ, such as the tribunal, entrusting to it the powers of the Council itself, that is the judicial power even on individuals. I conclude. So this tribunal, the tribunal, is a sheer instrument of political violence. I leave aside a very comment about the statute, about its specific way of acting, the infamy of having refused to judge NATO governments, and the shameful kidnapping of President Slobodan Milosevic, the violation of state and state organs' immunities, and I mentioned the sentence, the same sentence, that is the slogan, and so on and so on. The indictments against Slobodan Milosevic, this joint criminal enterprise, contrary to all principles of criminal law. The Milosevic trial and the other ones before the tribunal are political trials. The real crime by Milosevic is not to have accepted Western dictation's recognition. The trials, which are held mainly against Serbs, no leader of other republics has been ever really threatened to human and now Albanian Kosovo leaders. These trials are meant to warn peoples and leaders not to withstand imperial order. They are needed to impudently camouflage the aggression and embellish it, since their aim is to condemn supposed crimes of a supposed monster. And I remember here resolution 103. General Assembly, declaration of the inadmissibility of intervention. The duty of a state to abstain, this is generally ignored, from any defamatory campaign, vilification or hostile propaganda for the purpose of intervening or interfering in the internal affairs of the state. And the duty of a state to refrain from the exploitation and distortion of human rights issues as a means of interference in the internal affairs of states, and so on. We recognize here perfectly the barriers of Western power and mass media. This resolution is 81, in the year 81, when there was another climate, another balance of powers in international. And you see, even the defamatory campaign, you know, the criminalization of leaders were considered. Never has been double standard more evident. A state which refuses even to accept the Convention of the International Criminal Court of Rome and declared as supporting a kangaroo trial against the victims of the aggression and the leader who tried to defend his country. Such a complete lack of legality is tantamount to a condition of violence. It is not surprising that violence and terrorism, real or supposed, are widespread on the planet, if the most elementary conditions of legality and justice are so heavily infringed even by the United Nations. Thank you.